Okay, thank you very much for inviting me here and for the opportunity to give this talk. Actually, this is the first time I'm telling you this story, and this project was started right here in this very building a couple of years ago. We did it together with Dima Gangard from the University of Birmingham, and I will explain you later what the title means. So I'll start with some introduction. The story is about cold gases. I will explain to you what is the difference between the experiments we are used to see in condensed matter and experiments in cold gases. Then I will talk about what happens in one dimension over there. I will talk about expanding gas of hardcore bosons. Then I will run out of slides and I will switch to the board if I will need time. Okay. Okay, and this is the reference where it was published. All right, so what we are used to in condensed matter, at least, we are used to non-destructive measurements. We take a system, we measure the system many, many times, we change parameters back and forth, and we can do it as long as our sample is still alive. For example, we can do linear or weakly non-linear response measurements and learn a lot about our system from this type of measurements. And we also often rely on ergodicity in the sense that we can take a single system, wait long enough, and it will sample the entire phase space. And this is because of this ergodicity hypothesis, we can use the usual rules of statistical mechanics to calculate observable quantities. Everything is completely different in these ultra-cold atoms because all experiments are destructive. You prepare the system, you let it fly. Ensemble here means actually many copies of the, well, more or less copies of the identical system. You try to do as many experiments as you can. They're a little bit different. You get an average, and not because of the you wait a long time, but because you simply do it many times. So what people usually do, they do something which is called time of flight imaging. You start with a carefully prepared state of your atom trapped in a magnetic or electromagnetic or whatever else trap. So you assume that everything is in equilibrium. You took care to put your system in equilibrium somehow, and then you just let it go. You release the trap. Then you wait some long time. See, after the trap release, the atoms are flying all over the space, and then it just pick up some point in space, some distance r from the original trap. So if you assume that during the expansion there was no interactions, then of course the distance that the particles travel is related to the momentum, to the velocity times time. Momentum is a good quantum number. If there are no interactions in this way, you can relate the density that you observe in the real space by just making a picture with or making a movie to the density in the momentum space in the initial state. And what is the initial state? It is some state when interactions were still present. So it's not necessarily the trapped state. It depends on your system. And well, the way it looks is something like this. So if you have this kind of correspondence between the density of particles in the real space at a certain time after the trap release and density in the momentum space before the release, what you can do, you can measure momentum distribution, the average of the thing over many attempts when you do this experiment. Or you can measure higher order correlations between different points, because each time what you get is the particular realization. You get many realizations, you can calculate or measure whatever whatever higher statistical moment you want. So this is what Hungler bracket here stands for. And the idea that you can measure this way higher order correlation functions is due to L-Taltman, and there were a couple of experiments where this was done. So the way it actually looks is something like this. So So you set your system, it starts to expand, it expands, it expands, you look what happens here, and you try to restore what happened before. This is not a cold gas, this is an explosion. So what you want to see, you want to understand, you do forensic kind of work, you want to understand how to extract from knowing everything about bits and pieces that are flying around, what was before, and well, even better, you want to know what was the make and model of the original device. There's deeper analogy than this. don't worry. okay, so let's go back. Let's go to low dimensional system. Now I want to make a trap very, very long. So transverse dimensions are much smaller than the longitudinal one. So what happens here is that the width of this trap actually controls the interaction strength. So if I will just calculate Fourier transform of the effective 1D interaction, I will get something like this. It's inversely proportional to the cross-sectional area of this waveguide. So what I assumed here, I assume that I have a waveguide structure. All atoms occupy the lowest subband of the transverse quantization. The wave function of this subband is knows about the cross-sectional area and nothing else. And this parameter here is S wave scattering length, and I just put three-dimensional interaction in this form. This is why I got this structure. Now, this parameter is not a dimensionless parameter. It has units of velocity. So if I want to understand if interaction is strong or weak, well, I need to divide it by something. And this something is concentration divided by the mass. It would be Fermi velocity if I would have fermions. So if this gamma, which is dimensionless parameter, is large, then this limit correspond to hardcore bosons, infinitely strongly repulsive interaction between bosons. And well, you can achieve this by either making the waveguide more narrow or by changing the concentration. And there were, of course, experiments where they saw this limit. So why I want this limit? I want this limit because for bosons, strong interaction is simpler because these are like fermions. And weak interaction is more complicated. So what they actually did, at least in the first of these papers, they fixed the concentration, and they did many experiments. They observed something while changing the width of this waveguide. At some point, they saw that making it more narrow doesn't change anything. So that was already in the limits of their sensitivity, the infinite interaction. So they estimated that gamma in their case was about 10. So it's possible, it's realistic. Let me think about one particular experimental protocol, what one can do with this one-dimensional system. So let's start with the initial state, where we prepared everything in equilibrium in this very, very long trap. Then at some later time, at time zero, I just remove the longitudinal confinement. So it starts moving along this line, but the width remains the same. And then, well, that's what they do sometimes. You see, they have many parameters, they can switch off whatever they want. Well, this was the, okay, well, I will show you an experiment which was more complicated than this, and they done it like this. So you let it evolve, maybe in more complicated setting. And then at some point, if you want to see something, you must release this confinement simply for a simple reason that this is too narrow to see. It's a line. You cannot make a picture. So then at some point, they just release everything. These things start flying around. And then by looking at density at this point, so by averaging the density over this cross-section, you know how many particles reach this point. So this kind of time of flight imaging you can do in 1D. So more complicated experiment that I promised was this. So they started with sort of two bimodal distribution. They had many confinements. So they let go of one of them, and they let system evolve somehow before the release. So each image here corresponds to a new system which they released after waiting some time for the system to evolve. their message was that, well, look, it works very much like classical Newton's cradle, and they don't see any relaxation before the atoms evaporate. So it doesn't last forever. Anyway. Yeah. They have this large confinement like this, and then they have this two condensates, quasi-condensates. They just release these little pieces. They start moving in a larger confining potential. So what they prepare are two clouds of atoms that are colliding, going through each other, back and forth. They go back because of this. So each of these. The main mechanism of losses there is not some relaxation of the system, but simply evaporation. So they lose atoms. So what they say is that, well, on the time scale that their measurement is reliable, they don't see any relaxation here. So that motion continues and continues. So each of these shots is taken on a different system. They prepare it, they wait for this time, release it in all directions, make a picture, prepare it again, and so on. I think it is. I look at this paper, it's hard to to get the number. This was just the illustration that one can do many different things. So you can switch off this, you can switch off that, and in whatever order you want. But what I want to consider is something very simple. So you just let the one-dimensional confinement go and see what happens. So what I want to do is to consider just a simple quantum quench problem of the type that you can read in Landau and Lifshitz. So let me say that I have time-dependent Hamiltonian. And time dependence is step-like, so I had one Hamiltonian at time smaller than zero, something else at time larger than zero. I started in an eigenstate of this Hamiltonian, then I switch something in my Hamiltonian, but the wave function stays the same. However, the evolution is now determined by this new Hamiltonian. So the question is, what is this state? And what I want to do is not one single particle version of this, but many particle version. And the lesser time Hamiltonian includes the potential of the trap. And then I just release the trap. So this is the trap Hamiltonian. V is the trap potential. Rho is the density. And H0 is, well, something like a Lipp-Wieniger model in the hardcore limit. So this is translational invariant, and I want interaction to be delta function. And bosons with delta function repulsion. And I want it to be infinitely strong. I don't want to write it. So again, this Hamiltonian is translational invariant. So the difference between these two is that I add something that breaks the symmetry. And this is essential. So what I want to understand? I want to understand what kind of state my system will be in when I wait long enough. And I want to understand how this state is related to what I had to the state in which I prepared my system. And I would rather have the answer to these questions in terms of some observable quantities and not in terms of the wave function. Everything is 1D. Everything is 1D. So, yeah. Okay. We have three dimensions, right? X and Y are tight, and Z is. No. I still, it's one dimension, 1D. Yes. Yes, my original motivation was very simple, actually. So if you have two particles with long-range interaction, and they somehow, you know, you let them go, I understand that potential energy will be transferred to kinetic energy, and then I didn't understand what people extract from, you know, from these kind of pictures where the feed particles are non-interacting. For short-range interaction, it is okay. Yeah. But let's do one-dimensional problem. So what are hardcore bosons? These are bosons with infinitely strong contact repulsions, and therefore, what you expect is that there is some similarity between these hardcore bosons and the usual fermions, because two hardcore bosons don't want to be in the same place in space, and so are the fermions. So one can formalize it and actually use this formula. So this is just a Jordan-Wigner transformation. So psi b is a Bose operator. Psi f is a fermion field. There is some phase factor. Rho is the density. So if you apply this transformation, you see that the density is invariant under this transformation, so it doesn't matter what I put here, b or f. And if you use this transformation applied to your hardcore bosons, you will figure out that this Hamiltonian of bosons with infinitely strong contact repulsion becomes a Hamiltonian of free fermions, and nothing happens with the trap part of the Hamiltonian because density is invariant. So what I want to calculate? I want to calculate quantities of this type. So I have some operator. I have Heisenberg type time dependence. H0 is the Hamiltonian that I have after the release of the trap. And this angular brackets stand for averaging over the over the states of my system with the trap, over the initial state. So what is this all? Well, what I'm interested in is I can calculate this density of fermions, density of bosons, high order statistical moments, and whatever I want. So everything that I can calculate, I will calculate, but measurable quantities are this. So this is what people measure in time of flight experiment. What? Where? Say it again. N of x, well, okay, yeah. N of x is related to N of k.
Well, that one's arguable, but now you're going to go all
kind of loose. Okay, okay. I want to calculate this. I want to calculate this. I have reason. because the answer will be simple. I can do it. I can do it. I don't want to talk about it, but I can tell you the answer. But right. If I know this, I can restore rho of x, but I can calculate anything I want, trust me. It's too narrow. possible to calculate n of x. Trust me. No, but then you should ask different questions, right? You can say that, okay, you sit in this point, at this point, and you ask what will be the density at this point as function of time, for example, in a fixed point. Very late times, right? It will be some power law, you can figure it out. But I don't want to talk about it. Okay, so of course, this H0 is Hamiltonian of free fermions. This operator commutes with this Hamiltonian, and therefore, this is there. And f of k are integrals of motion. So these occupation numbers in k space for these fermions, effective fermions, do not change with time, and well, the corresponding average will be time independent. You don't not observe these fermions. This is just your device to write the Hamiltonian in a simple way. What you want is bosons which do not stand with the Hamiltonian. And well, now I will have some negative message. So there was a paper a couple of years ago with a very, 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 very long title. Well, there is 1D, there is hardcore. Lattice doesn't matter because they was because of the computer. So basically, what we considered it was the very same problem. So let's just let our bosons expand and see what happens. And what they saw numerically. Well, first of all, they saw numerically that if you calculate this average of the bosonic momentum distribution, then it becomes time independent if you wait long enough. And because it becomes time independent, they interpreted it as relaxation. Okay. Then they ask themselves, okay, what happens if we have relaxation? What does it mean? Probably it means that something happens with our probably it means that we can describe our system in a very simple way when time is infinitely large. And they proposed this way of description. They conjectured that one can describe the system at t equal to infinity by this density matrix. So this I is a complete set of integrals of motion, and these are kind of Lagrange multipliers that they need to fix from some other reasons. And if I will write it for my case of continuous system, well, it will be the integral. And well, according to them, the right choice of y is this fermionic occupation numbers, and I need to fix better somehow. Yeah. It's not necessarily temperature. It's not my result. No, what the no comment will be that it. Wait. It's important. Well, because people use it. So, well, first of all, if you just think about it, if you look at this form, doesn't look right because well, if you came up with one particular choice of integrals of motion, then of course any linear combination of them will be another choice, and there is infinite number of non-linear combinations, and there is no reason why all these betas will be different from zero. So if you take into account linear combinations, they should be equal. If you take into account any functions of them, you should come up with zero. But nevertheless, people didn't say it's insane for the following reason. So of course, once you assume that all these different numbers decoupled from each other, you can always find such beta that you will represent the right average. So this is fixed by the initial conditions. Well, because well, this thing they know. It's hard to argue against this. It's integral of motion. No, what they say sort of, well, if I would say that I have, well, capital N reservoirs, each it changes one particular integral of motion, not just energy, but everything else. Then probably I will have something like that. What they say, the statement is that no, we have an isolated system. And the finite size system, we are not looking at relaxation in a little piece of a larger system, just the entire system. I'll explain why I started talking about this. I didn't want to. So this, of course, is possible, because if you just have an average, there are many ways to write distribution function, and this is just one way. People didn't say that everything is insane for a simple reason. Somehow, this particular distribution function gave the right bosonic momentum distribution at large time. And there are many, many papers, dozens of papers, maybe 50, which basically repeat the same calculation. So let's write distribution function as an exponent, restore the coefficient, and write zero. And there is no end to that. Well, this is wrong. It's like cold fusion. I will explain you why in a second. Observation is correct, and there is very observation is correct, and there is simple physics behind it. It has nothing to do with relaxation. Come on. Let's think about free fermions. So I have just free fermions released from a trap. So I'm not thinking about hardcore bosons. I'm just thinking about this effective fermions. And of course, I started in a state where I didn't have translational invariance. And because I didn't have translational invariance, of diagonal correlations like this will be different from zero. And if I now go to later time when my system evolves according to translation invariant Hamiltonian, well, this thing will be time dependent, but time dependent will be the oscillating one. So this relation function will not decay. And if I will now use Weak theorem, I can calculate fluctuations of occupation numbers of this fermion. It will be some negative number, and of course, for the square, absolute value square of this exponent, it will remain constant, it will not decay this time. So, what I want to say here is that if I want to know, I wait long enough. So, I started with a state with a broken symmetry. So I would naively say that if there is relaxation, the entire memory about this broken symmetry, the initial state, should be gone. So the memory about broken symmetry is contained in this higher order correlation, not in the average, but in higher order correlation. So this is what one should study. So let me put some meat onto it. So if I take just if I just expand my potential near the origin, say that I have a harmonic trap, then of course the average momentum distribution will be a semicircle. What I did here, I neglected Friedel oscillations, which have relative order of 1 over n, and then this large number of particles. But these Friedel oscillations give the main contribution, the only contribution to this second order correlation function. So this r is the classical radius of system of n fermions. N is very large. L is the coefficient in the Hamiltonian, and K Fermi is Fermi momentum. So again, if I would change the size of my confinement adiabatically, so I change it and I wait forever and measure this correlation again, I will see that this R changes, this R changes. So the period of oscillation changes, but eventually it will just go away. And this, of course, just a counterpart of the usual Friedel oscillations, but in the momentum space. And because I have harmonic confinement, momentum space and real space are more or less the same. I can talk about finite temperature also, and just as the usual Friedel oscillations. So this oscillation survives as long as temperature is small compared with the Fermi energy. And it is very weak restriction. So what it taught me? It taught me right away that different k's are not independent from each other. I cannot write factorized distribution function or density matrix and pretend that it is correct. it's not enough to consider density. Please consider how the correlations, which I think already kills the entire deal. Now, what happens if I, again, these were fermions. Fermions are very nice, very simple, but we need to think about bosons. And this is the last transparency that I saw, I think. So what is possible to do? It is possible to derive an identity, operator identity, between this density of fermions, of the effective fermions in the momentum space, and the density of bosons in the momentum space with Heisenberg-like time dependence in the limit when t goes to infinity. So what I'm saying is that this operator and this operator in this limit have the same expectation value when you calculate averages with this wave function of the initial harmonic confinement. This is operator identity. Therefore, I have I will simply conclude that statistics of the fermionic occupation numbers and statistics of the bosonic occupation numbers in this long time limit are the same. Not just for the average, not just for the fluctuation, but for the entire distribution function. So these statistical moments of this quantity are the same as those of fermions, and these fermions are integrals of motion. This is what happens. And when I say that time goes to infinity, of course, it means that time is larger than something. What is this something? This something is the size of my confined system divided by the Fermi velocity. And here is the, here I run out of transparencies, I need to switch to the board. I cannot prove, okay. So this was true for hardcore bosons. The Liebling-Eger model, the identity, we will not have this identity for a simple reason that Liebling-Eger model in a harmonic trap is not integrable. So we will need to, it will be more complicated, but this time scale becomes the size divided by the sound velocity. Right. So what happens, it's like an explosion. So you let your system go, it takes time of the order of the size of the system divided by the sound velocity for the particles to redistribute. So the faster particles will be further away from the center, slower will be closer, and so on. If you just take the wave function formula and look what happens with the wave function when you take two coordinates close to each other, it vanishes. Like it would for hardcore bosons, but it doesn't vanish because they're hardcore bosons, it simply vanishes because they're flying in opposite directions. It takes finite time to get into this limit. So this is the time when you may have relaxation in your system. This is the only time when something interacts with the instant. And this is the open problem to try to figure out how these oscillations relax. They will relax a little bit, but I don't know how to calculate that. So what one can do for the Liebling-Eger model, it's not as simple as this, but one can figure out this time scale. It will be size divided by the sound velocity. There is another time scale which is shorter than that, which is basically much shorter time scale, which is mean free time, so the average distance between the particles divided by the Fermi velocity. So after this time, I will start seeing some further oscillations, I guess. So this basically for hardcore bosons, it is 1 divided by the Fermi energy. For Liebling-Eger, it is 1 divided by the chemical potential, shorter time scale. Before that, nothing happens in your system. So it is very much like an explosion. Your particles are flying around, they're confined. Well, some of them are faster than the others, they're moving towards the center. The sound wave goes through. It takes time of the order of size divided by the sound velocity for the faster particle to move away on the opposite side. And it will never come back. And of course, the analogy between this expansion and the explosion is not my idea. People wrote about it, and there are books written about it, kinetic theory of explosions. This is what people should be studying, I guess. So the message was that there is no such thing as generalized heat distribution. Forget about it. Even though you may read about it about every week. What if one wants to talk about signatures of relaxation or not relaxation, or not having relaxation, probably at least in the problems where you have in range type problems where you have different symmetries of the initial and final state Hamiltonians, you should look for the loss of this symmetry. So if I would change interaction constant in the light energy liquid, it would be also this type of problem. It would be E1 symmetry, for example. Okay, thank you. No, there's short time scale, which is mean free time. So if I do something on time scale shorter than this, then it is abrupt.
So what
is the real time scale? It's a small fraction of a millisecond, they say. They say it's shorter. Well, it's hard to say. No, this is separator identity. Temperature appears when you start averaging operator. Yeah. Okay. There is time scale associated with that. It is a factor when you do a relatively long time experiment like this with Newton cradle, because they want to do it as many, they want to see as many periods as they can. They are limited by this evaporation. Now, just a simple release probably doesn't matter. So evaporation means that they start flying anyway. Well, you just let them go. Okay. I understand. My motivation was a little bit different. Yeah. So it's power law. And it's not a funny power. It's independent of the interaction state. So if I sit in a given point, I fix x, I don't remember, 1 over square root of t, something like this for one dimension. I sit in a fixed position in space. Well, I'm not sure the exponent depends on x. Right. Fix large time and then look at as function of x. I understand. No, I cannot tell you. I cannot tell you right away. Well, then it's difficult. Then it's difficult. But it's another question, right? Now this is, well, the right-hand side doesn't know about time. The right-hand side doesn't care. It's a different function, completely different function. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Basically, what happens is that when they're already far apart, they're flying away from each other, the radio wave function, there's no need to interchange the coordinates. So there's no difference for integrable model if it is the real momentum or quasi momentum. This is what you measure. You measure distribution of this quantities which are usually not measurable. So they do appear in real systems. But you need to go to this strange experiment. Right, but the question is what you want to see, right? You can, well, this way you can measure quantities which you cannot do it. I was trying to ask a much simpler question. So, okay, let's consider this particular protocol. You do it this way. What will you measure? What will it tell you about the initial state of the system? So you first let it go in 1D, and then maybe you turn off the interaction by reducing everything. You can do the measurement in principle. And I want to understand what is the relation, what I will know about the initial state. What I'm saying is that what I will know is the distribution of quasi-momenta, not the real momenta. So this integrals of motion. And same is true for Litvinenko, although there is no such simple relation. Yes? Well, it's free fermions in a harmonic trap. One-to-one correspondence. That's on the operator level. Because the distribution function factorizes. They don't have correlations between different cases. I can calculate about as much about bosons as the extent of free fermions in a harmonic trap, which is about everything. But if I work hard enough, it will be higher order correlation. You want me to write the density matrix? I will not be able to write to it. I don't know what the right formula is. I'm not sure it's actually possible to write such a simple. Well, okay. So density matrix of fermions in a harmonic trap without time dependence. E to the power minus eta h 3, which is simple enough. So if you compare this momentum distribution, what you get from here is the real momentum distribution in the trap state. There is, of course, well, the trap was large, so there will be power law singularity at zero. This is a semicircle, doesn't have it. You cannot write an ensemble that, well, if. No. But if you neglect correlations, then it's over, basically. Okay. But I can write you this the right thing. And these are three fermions in a harmonic trap. Three fermions in a harmonic trap. Well, I'm saying that statistics of this at long times is determined by the statistics of free fermions in the harmonic trap in the initial state without any time dependence. All you need is basically this partition function. Yes, it contains all the correlations.
One thing I'm trying to say is that one of
the there is only one Lagrange multiplier. Temperature, nothing else. Thank you.